When the people that you know don't like you and your treasured friendships end, tune into this podcast where your artificial friends.
Welcome everybody to Your Artificial Friends. I'm Andy Chanley, joined by Sam Farmer and Josh Fligger. Larry Morgan's on assignment. We've discussed in your absence, you're the only person when we say that who actually is on a science.
he's got a purpose.
Yeah, you're actually doing something somewhere.
I love coming back here, though. It's like therapy for me to come back and see you guys. I missed it.
What are your feelings? I want to thank everybody for joining us for this podcast. I know I've said it before, but more and more listeners all the time. We just started the daily podcast, doing the little Andy's Almanac thing each day, and that's been a real bitch to put together.
Well, it's a good way to learn a little something every day.
It is.
Yeah, it's like my little time of school.
I was 8 minutes for that, Andy. 8 minutes, that must take a better part of the day.
It must take like 10 minutes.
No, I mean, it's you really have to, you know, you think about it, write it.
I have to research it, for one.
Yeah.
Because I don't just know that this was the day that Charlemagne set the record for most cups of coffee drank. I know some things, but I don't know all that. So to look up what did happen, and you know, who was born this day, and other momentous things that have happened. And then, once I've done that, to go back and edit and say, okay, that's not so important. Okay, I'll talk about that instead, or and decide what I want in and what I'm going to leave out. And then to go and find audio that I want to go with it.
Right.
And then to type it all out and write it. And then to record my part and put the audio in there. And this isn't, I don't have a you know, $55 million radio station to do this on. I'm doing it pretty rudimentarily on my, you know, iMac. So to put all of it together and you know, do all the Pro Tools snipping and cutting is a real bitch.
It sounds great,
it's
though.
It's taken a long time.
It sounds great.
Really
sounds really well produced.
I feel like I work again. Which is the crazy thing, because we're in our second week of unemployment.
Yeah, I know. Do you want me to come over like every once in a while and yell at you, Andy, I need your time capsule, just so you have like, you know, you feel like you're at work in the office again?
No, I don't. But it's it is weird getting used to this being out of work, and I'll share my feelings in just a second. But I don't want to leave you out, Sam. Have you gone ever in your life for long stretches of unemployment?
No. I haven't, although I've been laid off before.
But how long have you been at the LA Times?
I've been at the LA Times since 2000, and you know, very, very fortunate in a business. I'm knocking on wood here.
Touch wood and whistle.
Yeah, fortunate to have a job in a business that's really, you know, buggy making in the age of automobiles. So you've had to. I think back to something. A boss told me once, he said, if you don't like change, you're going to hate irrelevance. And so, I tried to work across multiple platforms, whether it's radio, do TV, web, you know, podcasting. I remember early on when they had the those cameras, before the phone cameras, there were the
like a digital camera.
Yeah, it was a little digital video camera, and
like a GoPro.
It was pre GoPro.
The HD cameras, right?
I forget the name of the brand, but and I would take it to events, and I would videotape people talking, or digitally tape people talking. And I remember an older reporter said to me, "What are you doing? Why would you do that?" And he said, "You'll never catch me doing that." And a couple of years later, he was out of a job,
right?
Because they, you know, the time is, and especially the younger generation wants to see things, wants to see the video.
Yeah.
And the whole idea that video or it didn't happen,
right? Know?
And so. So anyway, we have to be nimble in this business and keep working different angles and try to get fans closer and closer to, in this sort of voyeuristic society, closer and closer to the athletes, take them places where they've never been before. So one thing I really like to do on Facebook Live or on Periscope is show people the press box and what it's like before a game. What are we eating? What are they feeding us? What, in Dallas, they've got a big candy bar. Bar of candy, not a candy bar.
Giant candy bar, just sitting there.
Just one.
Everybody's staring at it. Like, what the hell do we do?
8-foot baby Ruth. Everybody.
It's like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory when they shrink it for Mike TV.
I guess I'll just lick it.
Yeah. It's a big, big bar filled with all types of candies and everything. And people like to see that kind of stuff. They want to know what it's like. I wanted to see that before I was a sports writer. I wanted to see. What's it like in the Boston Garden?
It's access.
Behind, yeah, exactly. You can really take people places.
You just did that in Minnesota. You went to see the Rams-Vikings game.
Right.
A week ago. And a week and a half ago. And I saw your video of the tour of the stadium and the Ziggy Wolf, the owner's box, which is amazing. And then the relatively Spartan press box,
yeah,
by comparison. And then you walk down and you go through the restaurant where the players come out of the tunnel. And then took you out onto the field and had a look around. It was great to get that kind of access and see the whole stadium and where all the important players are. And also of import to people here in L.A. because didn't the same people that built that stadium, they're building the Ram hole.
Exactly. Bucking Ram Palace, I've heard it called. so it was the same architects, same designers who are doing that, and the same use of that glass, which is called ETFE, which the Rams stadium is going to be an entire glass roof. It's almost like a carport because it's going to be open on the sides, but they'll be able to drop curtains and close that off so they can host Final Fours there, so the wind wouldn't affect people's shot.
What about it being like a greenhouse and just hot as hell?
Well, that's interesting. They say, the designers say, that it's actually 4 degrees cooler inside. So even on a baking day,
so the lights, the glass is reflective somehow.
The glass has what's called
but when it's
frit
filled
in
with
it,
like 90,000 people all baking in there too.
That's true. Yeah, and the heat generated by those people, but the glass has various degrees of frit, which is just like little pieces in the glass which you can make it like sunglasses.
It's all about frit these days.
Yeah. It's all about frit. Yeah. So it's all about ball bearings. The ball bearings. And one really interesting thing is they're going to be able to illuminate the roof and to such a high detail that you could put a high-definition ad up on the roof of the Rams Stadium. They'll even be able to stream the game live on the stadium, and so as you're flying over, and I'm thinking, I'm not sure I want my pilot watching the game as he's landing the plane, but one really neat thing that they're considering is figuring out the timing of flights. So if you have an Air France flight coming in, you could have an ad in French as the plane's coming over, and then switch it out, depending on which flights. So you could tailor your ads, which are, your ads are gigantic, cover the whole dome of the stadium. And you could tailor it to the flights coming in.
Right, so they'll be seeing up on the roof. They'll be seeing ads?
Well, you're in the, as a fan, you wouldn't be able. You almost project it. It's not. Right. It's not projected because they use these things called this puck technology. It's all frit. They have ball bearings in the roof. No,
Prestone, make that Quaker State. See how many Fletch
mentions pucks,
we can get.
These hockey pucks that are like 3 feet apart, and they're LED hockey pucks, and they can change the color.
They're basically pixels.
Yes, exactly. They're pixels. And I don't think people understand the scope of this site. This site is 3.5 times the size of Disneyland. It's that big.
Wow.
My son's a freshman at the University of Oregon. I was looking it up. University of Oregon is 5 acres. The campus is 5 acres smaller than the stadium site.
Are they also putting like an NFL headquarters or something there?
Yeah, they want to. You know, they're thinking about a West Coast Hall of Fame,
NFL Network.
Right. There, it's gonna be massive. They want to host. Draft. They want to host the draft. They maybe want to try to get the combine there, Pro Bowls there. And obviously, they're having a Super Bowl there.
That was the only thing people in Indianapolis had to live for, is the combine. Yeah.
Well, we might as well. We pulled the plug on St. Louis. We might as well pull the plug on Indianapolis, too.
Pulled the plug on the season, anyway.
So, Minnesota, I saw that you got to blow the horn.
Yeah, I faked it.
Is it really blow, or is it like some guy standing with a button going, okay?
I got to believe it's some guy standing there with a button. There was an aperture to blow through, but it didn't look like you'd be able to generate enough.
Do they also have like one of those little, you know, like you go walking into Ralph's and they have the little like rags you can clean your grocery cart off with? They have one of those.
Oh, for the lip.
So everybody comes through, they blow it. They're like, all right.
No, you know what? People weren't allowed to do that. That area was totally cordoned off. They let me climb the fence and get over and hop over and pose as I was blowing the horn. But I asked, you know, I said, can I please go blow the horn? I was with this guy and he's like, yeah, you got to hop the fence. So I did. So it's not like that's they awesome. Let fans come through and take their.
Right.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's cool. It's going to be a cool place for a Super Bowl. I'm really looking forward to that. So,
getting back to the question, you've never really gone long stretches of time where you haven't been
in my professional post college life.
Yeah.
No, I haven't. I haven't gone up, but I live in fear of that constantly, and I think I have a big time fear of failure more than a love of success. I fear failure and thinking, right, I'm going to be fired. After I file a story, you know, I just say, that was a horrible story. I mean, in fact, in the press box one time after a Patriots-Steelers game opening season, and I just closed my computer. I said, that was horrible. I'm going to be fired. And Don Banks from Sports Illustrated looked over and he goes, Farmer, his poor mouthing is in mid-season form.
And I'm going to bet that some of those stories you said, this was tripe. This was absolute dreck. People came up to you and said, I really love that story.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that funny? Yeah. It's you will work, you know, you'll craft this story. You'll spend all this time in the story and just hear crickets when it comes out. And then you write something that took you 10 minutes and you're embarrassed.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, you always want to put your best work out there, but something you put no thought into, and people will say, that was the greatest.
That
roundup, you know, where the way you said Lakers beat the Celtics 118-104 was so poetic.
That happens in radio all the time, though. Yeah. When you think you do a break where you shut the mic off afterwards, like that they're gonna put that in the Hall of Fame, man. They're gonna be calling me from the Radio Hall of Fame to put that in a time capsule for future generations. And you listen back to it on tape later and like, it's all right, it wasn't that great. And yeah, then you do something where you just totally stink the place up and you're thinking, oh my god, what did I was so tongue-tied, I don't know, I was a moron, I said the wrong thing. And you go back and listen to it, it's like, it's not that bad. You know, it's funny how when you go back with a little bit of time.
Right. It's a little like golf. If you play golf, you hit a good shot near the pin. It's never, I'm forgetting what I'm saying. I was going to say, it's never as good as you thought, never as bad as you thought. That makes no sense. Can we go back?
See, now we'll listen back to that. We'll listen back to that. No, and it won't sound as bad as you thought.
No, it will. It will. But I will tell you this. A buddy of mine, Darren Horton, over at Channel 5, I was trying to be perfect on TV and not say any ums, and at least when, you know, my version of perfection.
The audible pause. I do it all the time.
Right. But he said, listen, people expect you to talk a certain way. They don't expect people to talk perfectly. And they don't. So the ums and everything, that's how you just hear. And he said, what you don't want to do when you go on TV is go around telling everybody I was terrible. I was terrible. I really embarrassed myself. I didn't sound good. And I looked stupid, and that was a bad answer, because people, they're like tofu. They'll absorb that and they'll say, yeah, you know, I mean, you're all right. But if you come away saying, man, I nailed it, people will turn. It's like the Jedi mind trick. They'll say, you nailed it. They don't really know what good or bad is.
They weren't paying attention.
Yes.
Probably.
Yes.
Oh, when I first started playing music on stage, it's like I was just terrified, you know? And I play bass, and I do like a little bit of a clam, but I'm like you, I have in mind, oh, you're a fraud, you can't play a bass. Meanwhile, I played like 8 songs, and there was like one little clam in there, and I would walk off stage and be like, I suck. And my friend one time who'd been playing, you know, music for like 2 decades, he's like, you know, don't come off stage and tell people that you suck, because they were out there enjoying it.
Yes.
And then when you come off, you kind of look like an asshole, because you're telling them that what you enjoyed wasn't real, it wasn't good. You know what I mean? And you're looking kind of fake.
Yeah.
And I was like,
and right. Also, and then, they'll come away saying, oh, yeah, I liked it. I mean, Flager sucks.
Let them be more specific.
I remember going up there and playing and just being like, just making mistakes everywhere. And people are just looking up like, yeah, that's awesome. I'm just like, I don't even know what song I'm playing right now.
Well, it's funny. So I was doing radio up until 2001 when I got fired. Second time in Los Angeles, and then started doing other things, started doing voiceover. And at first I was doing stuff where it was, you know, member FDIC, batteries not included, you know, that kind of thing. And then after a while they're like, okay, you can do that, so let's have you do some other stuff. And pretty soon I was looking at copy where I'm the, you know, emotionally available father when his children come home from school and say, daddy, and we have a conversation. So it dawned on me that I'd never had any instruction in creating a character and being authentic in playing these parts. Everybody, you know, anybody can take a whack at it, and I was doing that. I was faking it until I made it. But I had a hard time understanding the craft of it. And so I started taking acting lessons. And from acting lessons, I went into acting class and scene study classes. And the most amazing thing that I would see in these classes is when people would get up, other students would get up and say, okay, all right, so we're going to do this scene. I had to work a double shift yesterday, so I'm not off book. I don't know my lines exactly, so take this with a grain of salt. We're just, you know, kind of workshopping it. What they did right there was take the 3 people in the room that were going to be snowed by what they did and think it was great, and took them out of the picture too. Mm-hmm. You might have a chance of you know, fooling somebody, right, at least. But if you stand up and say, wow, I suck, then everybody thinks, well, if he believes it. And this is a town of no's.
Right.
Because no one wants to take a chance on somebody that's going to fail, mm-hmm, or something that's going to fail. That's why you see Bad Santa 8. You know, that's why you see all of these sequels all the time. They want to try something that's tried and true, something that has a low possibility of failure. That's why everything is derivative in television, in movies, in radio. No one wants to take a chance on anything that's outside the lines. So if you come up and you're a little offbeat, and you come out and say, well, man, I'm not very good, why is anybody else going to go to bat for you? Well, if I take a chance on this guy, they're going to walk into my boss's office and say, I'm not very good, but it's the death knell. So you're right. Anytime you say those words, and it was funny because when I started doing voiceover, I talk about being fired, and we're going to get back around to that. I remember booking this huge video game, and it was really early on, right? Early, you know, it's like 2002 or 3 or something, and I was new to voiceover and new to doing that kind of stuff in Los Angeles, going from studio to studio. And I remember distinctly, I remember exactly where I was when I asked the producer, the main producer of it, or the casting director, she was out in the lobby, and I had, you know, was just given the script, and she goes, do you have any questions? I said, Yeah, well, this is my first one of these. So do you have any advice on, you know, how I should proceed? And she said, I have one piece of advice. What you just told me, don't tell anyone in there. And she was right. Yeah. And I walked in, and I was so in over my head that I totally cocked it up. And they ended up recasting me in it because I was just, I didn't know my shit. And I was so troubled by that, so crushed by the experience. And so I went to a coach, and I was talking to her about this, and she said, yeah, you got to stop doing that. You got to realize that you've gotten to where you are because you have an ability and you have a gift to give people. And they will hire you when the project they're working on requires that gift or that ability. And so you go in and do it. And when you walk in with your sunglasses on and your boots and your great blue jeans and jacket and sit down and put your feet up and wait for the party to come to you. Don't look around and wonder where the party is. You're it. And they hired you to come in and be the party. You give your performance. And at the end of it, don't say, was there anything else you wanted me to try? Do you want me to try this with a little more sugar in my voice? Don't say any of that stuff. If they want it, they'll ask for it. And if they don't get it right in that session, they'll book you again to come back and do it a different way. But never, ever tell someone that you blew it or you're not good at what they're hiring you to do, because you make them look like a dumbass.
Right.
Wait, I just hired you to do this and you're not very good at it? Holy shit. This is the last thing I needed today. Yeah. And it's really funny how it's in every industry, anything you do, whether you're in show business or not. I think it's very important to know.
Can you imagine trying to meet girls that way? You're like at a bar, you're like, All right, I'm just kind of a turd, but you want a drink?
I remember doing a Raiders halftime of a Raiders game. I was doing the halftime show, and during the commercial, I turned to the host and I said, "I just feel like I'm saying a lot." And he said, "Yeah." He said, "I was wondering if we were paying you by the And we come out of a break. He asked me a question. And I say, and then I start, you know, I lose focus on what he's asking me, and I start thinking, I wonder if that's a sound of my brain idling. it's so self-defeating to, you know.
Yeah, you talk yourself out of it.
You start thinking, I am bad. What am I doing here?
And then it's an avalanche, because you're thinking I'm bad, then you make a clam, and you're like, oh my God, I just confirmed it. I really am bad.
I remember one time early in my career, I was at the LA Times. This was right out of college. And I worked for 3 years after college at the LA Times. Then I left for Seattle for 5 years and San Jose for 5 years, came back to LA. But at this time, I was covering high schools and small colleges and answering phones and that kind of stuff. And I remember calling, I was in an Occidental football game, and I want to say it was the night that Kirk Gibson hit his homer, so it must have been 88. And I didn't really understand how newspapers worked, so I thought, well, if I don't get my Occidental College game story in, the Los Angeles Times is not going to land on 1.2 million doorsteps tomorrow morning. I thought they were going to hold up the whole paper for my Occidental story. So, you know, I called in, and back then you had to call in on a payphone, so you had to wait for some, you know, teenage girls to get off the payphone so you could, you know, they'd commandeered it, and you wait, you get it, and you call in, and I'm flipping through the pages, and they said, okay, in the first quarter, Vance Mueller rushed for 47 yards on, hold on, flip, 12 carries, and wait, there was an interception, and the guy on the other end said, he loosely cupped his hand over the phone, leans back, he's an editor, he says, "Anyone want Farmer? He's gagging." Which then gives you no confidence. And he gets back on the line. He said, "I'll tell you what." He said, breathe into a paper bag and call us back. I realize, you know, a lot of times you just have to have confidence in what you do. Yeah.
Josh.
What?
How long is your longest stretch without gainful employment?
I don't know. I got, I think, like 2 years. And what happened was I got laid off in Nielsen.
All right.
And
the people that do the ratings for radio and TV.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I worked in the movie aspect of it. Like when if you ever get approached by those people, go, hey, you want to go see a free movie? Mm-hmm. And they give you a pass. That was one of the things we did. But they laid me off, and I was basically just, I decided, I'd been working since I was like 17 years old for then, and I was like, I'm going to chill for like a month or two. You know what I mean? This is great.
Right.
I had no kids, just, you know, only married like a couple years. And I got a pretty decent severance, so it wasn't that, you know, we weren't strong, you know, hard up or anything. And then I basically just was a bum for 2 months, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna start looking again. And then I realized how hard it was to find a job.
Oh, yeah.
And about 3 months into that process, Cindy got pregnant. I don't know how that happened. No, she got pregnant, and then it kind of just fell into my lap. I was like, well, why would we pay for somebody to watch the baby when I can, this could be, you know, I could be there. I don't have to go, sure. You know, I mean, if I go find a job, I'm basically just going to be working for a quarter of the salary because the rest is going to be going to childcare.
You have to make $30,000 to break
even.
Yeah.
And why do that when I can just, you know, be there and raise them? So I kind of just took like the first year and a half of his life off and was a stay-home dad.
Really?
Yeah, and then I got hired as a part-time at the Sound just for something to do, and then that rolled into a full-time.
Huh. So, how about that?
That's the only time, other than right now, of being unemployed.
Right, and you're 2 weeks into it. Has your life changed, your lifestyle changed?
Yeah, I'm home a lot.
Is Cindy sick of you?
No, she's work. I find myself being extremely, catch myself being extremely bored. Like, just sitting there going, because I'm not the type of guy, I don't like sitting in front of a TV. Like, when I hear people go, oh, I watched a marathon of, like, The Walking Dead or something, I'm like, ugh, that just sounds terrible. Just sitting on a couch for 6 hours and watching some show.
You could also, like, smoke pot while you did that.
That's true, but I told my wife there's never been a better time to be unemployed with pot being legal now. I'm like, this is gonna be, and she just looked at me and was like,
there's never been a better time to be single.
I've been very, like, I get up still at the same time, 6 a.m. every morning. I'm the first one up, and I find myself just getting stuff, a lot of whatever needs to be done around the house, and I'm scared for the day when everything is fixed and everything is cleaned, because I'm not going to have anything to do anymore. But yeah, it's starting to get a little scary.
Yeah,
it's still starting to kick in a little bit.
Starting to pinch a bit.
Yeah.
I feel that, and I'm one of those people in general. Like, this has been me for years, but like on a weekend, if I don't get some little job around the house done. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just, I put in that doorstop.
Yep.
At least I feel like, okay, I solved one thing. I can mm-hmm. relax and have fun with my family. And, you know, I've just that sense of accomplishment. I need that.
Yeah, I agree.
And I've been, that's one thing that's been taking up my time between podcasting and painting my laundry room floor and, you know, all of the little jobs I've got around. I have no fear of not having things to do. There's no way I can get everything done. And I'm trying to get my flabby ass in the gym on a more regular basis and take care of myself. I think I'm falling apart. I've got so many maladies right now. I've got, where should I start? Like 4 years ago, I was diagnosed with plantar fasciitis in my right foot.
Yeah, that's bad.
Pain in the ass. And then I had a plantar fasciitis in my left foot. But that turned into what they call a neuroma. Like, you know, in between, like in the ball of your foot, in between where the toes, there are nerve centers in there. So that I have like a couple of toes that always feel like they're tingling. and
like they're asleep.
There's a nerve being pinched there. Yeah. So I've got that. I've got what else? I've got a trick hip. Right now, it's just feeling like there's a muscle pull.
Do you do any stretches or any yoga or anything like that?
Yes. All right. Yeah. But
because I've had really bad back problems my whole life, and I went to physical therapy, mm-hmm. and they showed me some stretches, and within like 5 months, it's a complete turnaround.
Yeah. Well, and I have back problems, chronically too, and I know how to nip those in the bud if I ever feel them coming on, and know the stretches to do and so forth. But I went to the doctor a couple of months ago, and I'm like, I feel like I might need surgery on my left thumb. It's the pain in there, and I boxing, doing Krav Maga 15 years ago, I think that maybe I injured something there. And maybe it's just now coming home to roost. He does x-rays and ultrasound and all this kind of stuff. And he comes back and says, your tendons are fine. Your muscles, perfect. You have arthritis. From an injury a long time ago, you have arthritis in this left thumb. And here are your choices. You can sit on the couch and do nothing, and it'll feel better. Or you can live a reasonable, active lifestyle like you probably want to do, and it's going to hurt more. It's just going to hurt and always hurt.
Or you can just cut it off.
Or you can cut it off. So then I'm going back for a checkup this last week, and my right elbow's been killing me.
It's the rubber football elbow.
God damn it, Josh. We throw this Whole Foods rubber 5-inch football between our offices.
Football's not worth 30 cents.
No, it's not. But we had this game where, our offices were? And they were like kind of diagonal.
Make it through the door.
Kitty corner. Yeah. We'd have to throw it through your door and make it through his door, and he'd catch it in his office and throw it back, probably like 25 feet away.
Yeah, maybe not even that. Maybe like, it's like 20, you're right.
Yeah, 20, yeah. 20, 25. And so pick up the ball. It would do it for completions. What was our highest completion?
It was like 43.
43.
I mean, you didn't even have to catch it. You just had to get it in the office.
So it was a rare time that we had...
It would always be when Dave was off. Dave would be on vacation and be all right, football time.
Yeah, exactly. So picked it up like a couple of months ago for the first time in months. It had been spring the last time we had done it. I pick up the football and I'm throwing it back and forth with him. Like the next day, I'm like, what is that? I got like I did something. Did I bump my right elbow? Or what's going on? And it kept getting worse and worse and worse. Go in for the checkup on my thumb, and I said, so how far do you go up on the hand of this, hand surgeon? He goes, to the elbow. I'm like, okay. I got this thing over here, and he says, extend your hand out straight in front of you with your fingers flat. I'm like, okay. And he pushes down on the tip of my right middle finger. He goes, you feel that? And I go, yes. And he said, yeah, you got tennis elbow. So now I have tennis elbow that I have to do physical therapy for. On top of all of this other...
What's the physical therapy just like?
It's strengthening and stretching, doing all kinds of stretches to, make the ligaments...
And will it go away once you...
Well, that's the thing, is it's probably going to take months. It's a bitch. And I had no idea that it was such a nasty, lingering thing. But Laura found me online. She goes, I've been hearing people rave about CBD oil, the oil that's made out of cannabinoids. Cannabis
sounds pretty.
It's made from industrial hemp, and there's no THC in it. I guess there's no. It doesn't get you high, but there's a cream that I've been rubbing on, and you know what? It felt like it kind of made a little bit of a difference. And then there's the oil that you ingest, and it's nasty. It's like taking your bong from college and taking the bong water. And boiling that down for an afternoon, and then drinking that sludge—it's really the nasty, the taste that sticks around for a long time that I don't love. So I've been mixing that with like chocolate milk. But I feel like I'm falling apart. That's added to the notion of, but I'm all right for a while. We can make the mortgage, through a. A good chunk of next year, and the kids are going to be fine, the mortgage and all that, kind of stuff. You've got savings, but you start to wonder about what the next step is after a while. It's like when you go on vacation, you know, that first week is bliss.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then towards the end of the second week, you're starting to, okay, got to get to work. Got to feel like I got to do something.
Right, yeah.
And because you don't want to be Wally pipped. And so there's some of that is starting to creep in, like I should get busy. But I'll tell you what, the several hours a day that I'm spending doing the almanac thing for this podcast has been keeping me busy, and I don't feel as idle as I was. Now then, we just have to find a way to make some money. Because I was thinking that volume was going to do it. We just do more of them. And the money will start rolling in. So if anyone wants to sponsor a podcast,
right.
We've been told that there are people that do that.
Really?
Yeah. We've got good numbers, too. We're getting good numbers.
Yeah. I'm really chuffed by the people that are listening and so forth. But, yeah, it's weird to be out of work and not be terrified about it.
Do you notice? I know one of the things I do notice is because I get up and I'm like in the morning I'm motivated. You know, I get up and I start to do everything and I feel like if I keep myself busy, the day will go by faster. And my kids at school, my wife's at work, and you know I can't wait for them to get home because I want to hang out with my family. That I get everything done so quick that all of a sudden it's like 12:30 and I'm like, I don't have anything to do, and I'm not going to see them for like another 5 hours. And then you start to get panicky. You're like, what am I going to do? I got to find something to do. You notice like later in the day is kind of the worst because you're so proactive at not being trying, you know, lazy and mm-hmm. sitting there that you get stuff done too quick.
Right.
Do you do that at all?
Well, no, that's not my problem because, as a matter of fact, I've got to go in a short time. Lara has a dentist appointment. And I'm going to watch Vivian at home. Vivian is 2.5. I'm going to watch her, and then it's going to be time in an hour for Vivian's nap. So I'll have to stick around with her. Maybe I'll even have a nap. Or get some work done while she's sleeping. And then watch her while Lara goes and does her work and then picks up Silas at school and brings him home. She started working as a postpartum doula. So she's working with new moms, and that's starting to ramp up a little bit. Is this going to change where I'm the homemaker?
Yeah, little Susie homemaker.
That'd be fantastic.
You get your frilly little apron and everything.
Will you get me an apron for Christmas?
Absolutely.
Little kiss the cook.
I got to
frills on it and everything.
My buddy Austin Murphy did that with his wife. He switched roles. He was a magazine writer, Sports Illustrated, and he was, in fact, had the prime beat at Sports Illustrated. I mean, he did the Tour de France and he did college football, but his big thing was he did the swimsuit issue. So he'd go and do the story.
Yeah.
You might not have noticed there's actually a story that goes along with that about the island,
whatever.
You don't say.
They could shoot that in a parking lot downtown.
That's always been lost on me.
So he'd be there for 3 weeks doing the Sports Illustrated thing. Anyway, he and his wife switched roles. So he became Mr. Mom and he wrote a book called How Tough Could It Be, and it's a great book, and it was optioned for a sitcom and everything. It was
wow,
but it's I highly recommend that. How tough could it be? I believe, or how hard could it be? How tough could it be?
It's
Austin Murphy.
The idea of
get him on the show.
The conceit being how hard could it be to be a mom?
To be a mom, Mr. Mom. Yeah.
My hat's off to this woman because Lara, the stuff she does every day, she does a lot of stuff. To be fair, that. As a dude, I wouldn't give a crap about, you know. She researches everything, every food they eat, right. every pillowcase we buy is research. You know, some stuff doesn't off gas dioxins and whatever stuff. I wouldn't trouble myself with,
because
you know I was born in a steel mill and lived in the bottom of a well, you know, for most of my childhood. We drank gasoline.
They're the voice of reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I drop a plate full of green beans on the floor. I'm like, hey, they're still good, Owen. And she's like, no, you can't have those.
Oh, yeah,
they're always riding the ship when it's and the ship is constantly going right and left, and they're always bringing it back into the center.
Yeah.
I got to say that one part of Austin's book that was memorable, he talked about, you know, everything you do during the day, and you just have no And he said, you know, I thought I was doing about 50-50 with the workload, and I realized I was doing about 10% of what you have to do around the house. And he said, I had an epiphany when I started to sit down to pee, because it was the only time I got to sit down during the day. And he said, you know,
he sits when he pees?
Yeah, well, he said that's what happens when you're Mr. Mom. Yep. You start sitting when you pee, because you luxuriate in that minute.
Hey, I'm a believer in the sitting and the peeing. Because
it, really?
Yes. At nighttime.
You're a sit peer?
Oh, yeah.
Only nighttime.
Oh, okay.
But you don't want to turn that light on. It just sit down. Keep the light off. Sit where you pee. Yeah. You agree, or is that a weird
thing? I don't do that, but I see the logic in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, there's nothing worse than the wake thing up about and having that is, bright.
I love my boy, but he's 7, and I don't have as much faith in his accuracy in the middle of the night as I do in mine. So I would loathe sitting on a toilet seat where...
Have you ever sat down and the toilet seat was up and gone straight into the toilet? I've done that way too many times. But like, you think by now I would check the toilet seat. I still do it.
Which is appropriate for this podcast, where we have gone straight down.
That must be what women are talking about putting down the toilet seat. All right.
Yeah.
Good heavens. Well, best of luck to you in your job. You shouldn't be on the beach long, as they say in radio trade magazines.
Well, hopefully. I don't know. We'll see.
And I don't. It's like you were saying at the beginning, Sam, about working in newspaper. there are still a few newspapers in the world, but it's so important to be doing other things and to move on to other things. You know, radio. I was saying this to there was a panel discussion at LA Valley Community College, and I was talking to the students about that. Some were asking questions about radio, and I'm like, you know, my radio station is going off the air tomorrow at 1 o'clock, and to be no more. Now, I'm not here to poop on radio, but I'm here to tell you this technology has been around for 130 years, and it's survived television and the internet and satellite radio and cell phones, but I wouldn't count on it to last forever. It'll still have its place. So, yeah, after a while, you start thinking, what else could I do? I've got it planned what I want to do when I retire. I want to build we were talking about this earlier, Josh. I want to get a wood shop and make rocking chairs and selling them for an insane amount of money to rich people.
In your frilly little apron.
Yes. But I just haven't figured out what I need to do from now until I get to retirement age.
Right. You figure it out. Just you're skilled. You are skilled. No, you really are. I mean, and that's... And don't tell people any different.
You should see what I just did to the laundry room. It's really good.
Do not start by selling your rocking chair. Be like, this is the worst rocking chair you're ever going to use. Yeah. Sell it with confidence.
That ain't good.
It's a rocking chair, but it doesn't really move as well as I thought it would. So I don't know, but this is my first attempt.
You probably want something from somebody else. But.
Right. Maybe you want one that they made out of flit.
This is the most amazing rocking chair you'll ever see
anywhere.
It's
all flit these days. Hey, thanks for coming by and hanging out for a little while. Mm-hmm. And cheering me up while we let's file for unemployment together.
That's what I'm doing right now. That's exactly what I'm doing when I leave here.
That's your artificial friends for today. We'll have Larry Morgan back in the fold here sometime soon. I'm told we might be looking down the barrel of our first foursome very soon.
Ooh,
we might be able to get all terrific. Four of us in the same place for the very first time. That's going to be glorious.
Yeah. Don't get my hopes up. Don't get me all excited.
Sometime soon. But thank you for subscribing to Your Artificial Friends. If you haven't told a friend about it, please do. We desperately appreciate that. And reach out to us if you want on Facebook. Your Artificial Friends Facebook page is set up by our buddy Aaron. And you can reach us individually at...
LA Times Farmer on Twitter.
Joshua J. Flieger at Gmail.
Have you gotten any email besides the Steelers thing?
No.
And I'm Andy_Chanley @twitter.com. Bye-bye. We'll talk to you next time on Your Artificial Friends.